Well, going back to the bond issue and work, upon release, many of these women have ankle monitors. And I read in your study that many often have to pay a private company in order to have that ankle monitor monitored. And that's money that these women can't necessarily pay because, for one, they're not here, quote unquote, legally, so they really can't work. So how are they expected to pay either bond or that ankle monitor fee? So a lot of these women end up being trafficked.
Well, we did hear a couple stories throughout doing this work, not as part of the study, I don't think, but in general of women that had to make do and figure out a way of how to pay. And that was sometimes, you know, with people from their family helping them out monetarily. If there was younger adults in the family, having them work and bring some money in. But some women also being in working conditions that were had them there all day without any breaks throughout the day. So they were working 8 to 12 hours without any breaks, including going to the restroom, and were provided a little food in between them, maybe 5 minutes to eat during that time.
Yeah, I think, as you mentioned, one of the things we heard was sort of this perfect storm that creates this increased vulnerability to exploitation or to human trafficking. And so a piece of that are these debts, these multiple debts that many women owe. So many folks that we talk to and through other work that we've done share that they still owe a smuggling debt. So maybe when they originally left Guatemala, for example, they had to borrow money from a friend or family member to pay their way to the U.S. So they still owe that person. And then if they receive a $7,500 bond to be released from detention, they don't have that money, so they might borrow that from someone else. So now they owe that person. And then, as you mentioned, they may experience a period of time where they don't have legal documentation or a work permit. And in addition to that, if they have an ankle monitor, an electronic ankle monitor, it also hinders their ability to find work. One, because the ankle monitor might restrict them to a certain geographic area. They might have to stay close to the electrical outlet to charge it. They might have to stay close to a phone where they periodically have to check in. They might have a geographic radius that they can't go outside of, and so a job might be outside of that. They also have to periodically go to ICE check-ins or ankle monitor check-ins in other parts of the city or even in another city, and so those might hinder their ability to meet a regular work schedule. And so in addition to that, this other piece of that perfect storm of vulnerability to trafficking includes the precarious housing we saw women have. So they might find a couch or an extra room to stay in at first, but that often tended to be temporary, and they would be either couch surfing or trying to find another more stable place to live. And women also talked to us about not having the right kind of documentation that landlords asked for. Even if they were seeking asylum and they sort of had a precarious immigration status in the U.S. during this time, they didn't have the paperwork that landlords often wanted. And so their housing was also precarious. And all those things together, not being able to find solid work where they're paid fairly because of the ankle monitor, because of their status, et cetera, in addition to these debts that they also owe, make it such that the likelihood of them being exploited in order to make ends meet, in order to be able to pay for their children, is high.